Brahma, Vishnu, Paradaya, Krishna, 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 Shrimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Sri Varshapandavi Devi, Dayataya Kripa Priye, Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dayane Prabhave Nama, Madhu Yojvala Premanta, Sri Rupa Anugama, Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vikrahaya Namaste. Namaste Gauravani Sri Murti Dinatari Upano Gavi Rutas. Today is the disappearance festival of Srila Prabhupada's Guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. Disappearance festival may seem strange. Why should we celebrate when someone leaves this world? Usually it's an affair of mourning. There are several lectures, Srila Prabhupada, on the appearance and disappearance days of his guru. Two of which are particularly memorable. One is the lecture where Prabhupada is talking about his own personal association with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how he came to meet him and how he became his follower. And then Prabhupada starts talking about his own mission, which for the disciple, his life is his own life is none different from his relationship with his guru. Sometimes people ask about, well, how do we cultivate our relationship with the guru? But actually for the surrendered disciple or the true disciple, their whole life is their relationship with the guru. Everything they do and everything they think and everything they speak, it's simply for the pleasure of their guru. So then, when Prabhupada was talking about himself coming to the Western countries, it wasn't that he changed the subject of talking about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was speaking about him in relationship to his own life and what it meant to him. Especially because the whole mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was to preach Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Prabhupada composed his own pranam mantra with his own disciples. So, lacking in any knowledge of what to do, so totally lacking that there's no question of them composing pranam mantra even to their own guru Maharaj. They had no idea there should be such a thing, let alone how to compose in Sanskrit. So Prabhupada wanted to give them this facility required to offer their respects to him. So Prabhupada made his pranam mantra. There's the first verse, generic mantra for all gurus and following Bhaktisiddhanta. The second verse is describing what is the particular speciality of this guru. See, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there's the first mantra, Namaram Vishnu Padaya. Then there are another three to describe his particular qualities, because it's the general characteristic of any bona fide guru in this world is as described. He's very dear to Lord Krishna in this world. And simply like that much is stated. And then exactly what is his particular contribution? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's contribution is given there. Srivasa Bhanavi Devi Dayataya Kripa Kriya. He's known as the He's an ocean of mercy. He is powerfully giving knowledge, and he's empowered to give knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. Not only that, but he gives topmost resplendent love, enriched with the sweetness, Madhurya Jvala Prema, he gives that devotional service which is following the line of Rupa Goswami, with namely that which is resplendent with the sweetness of love of Krishna. It's a little difficult to translate in English. English wasn't meant for all this. English wasn't a language developed on rasa or bhava or tattva, simply developed on ahara nidra bhaya maitra background, Western languages. Sometimes it becomes a little difficult to translate. He is the personification of the power of Chaitanya consciousness. He's also the personification of the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the deliverer of the fallen and he destroys the misconceptions he's the remover of the misconceptions which arise from philosophical ideas opposed to those of Rupa Goswami. So this is the specific characteristics of Bhaktisthan Sarasvatthakur given in his Pranam Mantra. And in Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra, we say Prabhupada actually Bhaktisthan Sarasvatthakur. Usually when we say Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So in his Pranam Mantra that he composed, he said that he identified himself as the servant of Sarasvatthakur, because he is preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Western countries, and thus delivering them from personalism and voidism. So Prabhupada, his life and his mission was non different from that of Sarasvatthakur. He actually fulfilled the mission of Sarasvatthakur, which he wanted. Prabhupada, when he composed a poem in honor of Bhaktisthana Sarasvatthakur, Sarasvatthakur was very pleased, particularly with one verse, that absolute is sentient, thou hast proved in personal calamity, thou hast removed. He particularly appreciated that and would show that to others. It was recognized that Abhai Charan, Abhaida, as he was known in the Gaudiya Mat, Abhai Babu, had understood the inner intentions of Pakistan's So Prabhupada's mission was to preach in the Western countries and all over the world, beginning from the Western countries, and remove the calamities caused by impersonalism and voidism. So in this lecture I was speaking about, Prabhupada went on to explain how he had come to the Western countries. His mission, light cutting. His mission had become successful. And then this lecture is particularly memorable because at the end, Prabhupada summed up his achievements in the Western countries you may wonder why Prabhupada was speaking about himself. But then he summed it up by saying, actually, it's all his mercy. So he said that actually all of you are more to be thanked because you are helping. And then at this point, Prabhupada simply broke down into tears, overwhelmed with ecstasy, remembering his Guru Maharaj. So that's one very memorable lecture of Prabhupada speaking about Bhaktisthana. And there's another very memorable one. I believe this must be on one of the disappearance days of Bhaktisthana. When Prabhupada was saying that actually appearance and disappearance, there's no difference. That we celebrate the disappearance and the appearance, because for one who is situated on the eternal platform, the apparent coming and going
It's not coming, it's only from our standpoint. Prabhupada gave the example of the sun, that we see the sun rise in the morning and we see the sun set in the evening and we think that the sun is rising and the sun is setting. But that's only from our limited viewpoint. From the sun's viewpoint, he's neither rising nor setting. The sun is situated in his position. So in the same way, great acharyas come to this world, and from our vision, it appears that they come and they go. But actually, they're always situated in their transcendental position. They're always situated with Krishna. And they come into our lives and give us some light, the light of transcendental knowledge, the light of Krishna consciousness. But they themselves are always situated in that position. They don't come and go in the sense that materialistic people, they come into this world in one particular body. For some time, they flap around. And then again, they leave this world. And they consider this to be all in all, and they consider that to be reality. Whereas one who's situated on the transcendental platform, he's always with Krishna. Never separated from Krishna. And in that sense, it's not that he's taking a different position by coming among us. And also, his leaving is also not leaving. Because a great acharya is always present by his instructions, continues to exist. His presence, or the significance of his presence, is in his instructions. And they continue, they remain. So, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said in relation with Haridas Thakur, that he reasons ill who tells that thou art dead, although thou art living still in sound. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavs die, but thou art living still in sound. A Vaishnav dies to live, and living tries to spread the whole world around. So a Vaishnav never dies. We don't say death. Today is death. So, no. Say disappearance. Just like that. Avibhav Tirobhav. It's appearance and disappearance. Just like the appearance and disappearance of the sun. We don't say that the sun is born, has died. Simply, it's manifest in our vision, and again is non-manifest, but is always existing. So this is how it is to be understood. A powerful personality appears in this world, and gives us instruction how to go back to the spiritual world in which he continues to live. Comes here for a short time to give us powerful instruction on how to go back there. And actually, we're discussing is the disappearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. His final instructions were very much like this, actually. His final instructions were to his disciples, which were given on the night before he left this world, which was the 31st of December 1935, and then he disappeared early morning on the 1st of January 1936. So his final instructions to his disciples were about living in this world, practicing Krishna consciousness, and being always aware of our need to enter into the eternal world. These were his final instructions. How we have to follow the followers of Rupa Goswami, taking the instructions of Rupa and Raghunath Goswami. Understanding that, and from that situation, we can actually execute the Sankirtan. We can engage in Sankirtan, which is the means to enter the kingdom of our eternal necessity. Our eternal need is to be with Krishna. In this material world, We have apparent needs, but our real need is to go to Krishna. So this is paraphrasing what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, his final message to his disciples, those who are present. And he said, on his final message, my blessings to all those present and not present. So I myself, personally, I was very much fascinated by the personality of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur since joining this movement. Of course, all our acharyas, they're very impressive. They're all wonderful personalities. Once when Prabhupada was asked about his Guru Maharaj, he said, what can I say? He was a Vaikuntha man. So all of the great acharyas, if you think of them, all great, wonderful personalities. But they all have their own individual personalities. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very austere, very strict, very convinced, absolutely unflinching in his dedication to the absolute truth. Never frivolous or whimsical. Very powerful acharya, who he changed the course of the history of religious life. Just like our Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada is recognized as having changed the course of the history of the Vaishnava doctrine. He made a significant difference in this world. So in the same way, what we probably don't recognize so much is, maybe because we're living later in history, we haven't seen it so much, or maybe because we don't talk about it enough. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually changed the course of religious history. If he hadn't appeared and preached so strongly at that time, then so many wrong doctrines, which were very prominent at that time, they would have simply overwhelmed what we call at least the Hindu religion, although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was told his followers that don't preach that we are Hindus. Don't say like this. We are preaching from the eternal platform. Not anything mundane. Hinduism is another mundane consideration. We have to understand what is the eternal platform. So if he hadn't come at this time, then within Indian society, or what we call the Hindu religion, there were so many new ideas, which were very common. On the one side, there was Vaishnavism in Bengal and Orissa, which was very much declined, very much degraded from the pristine standard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. That in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many bad things were going on. Mostly all the Vaishnavas, those who call themselves Vaishnavas in Bengal and Orissa, mostly non-vegetarians. Many philosophical deviations also. Then on the other hand, especially in Bengal, there were many new movements, religious movements, among which the Ramakrishna Mission was very prominent, which seemed like something very good, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out the many defects in their how they're actually misleading people in so many ways with wrong ideas, which I think many of you are quite familiar with, so I won't go into detail here. I hope you're familiar with it. So there was that, and then there was the Brahma Samaj. It has no influence now, but at that time it was many of the leading intellectuals of Bengal were very much attracted to this. At that time, Bengal was very prominent in India. Calcutta was the capital of India for some time. Especially Bengalis, more than others at that time, were educated in the Western way. At that time, so many Bengalis were very prominent. Vivekananda, Aurobindo, the Tagore family, Jagadish Chandra Bose, Chittaranjan Das, many prominent Bengalis. So many of them were followers of this Brahma Samaj, which was founded by another Bengali, Ram Mohan Rai. And the Tagore family were very, very, very prominent. They were followers of this. So, if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati hadn't come and preached as strongly as he did at that time, then certainly the whole Vaishnava teachings would have been swept away. It was already at an extremely low ebb. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he revived what is actual Vaishnavism, showed the path, what is actual Vaishnavism according to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He revived that. Otherwise it was practically forgotten. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took up the message of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and very strongly and powerfully contested all the many, many wrong ideas. He was fighting all his life. All his life, even at the age of 6, he was brought by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to see one well-known Babaji, Puri, Swarup Das Babaji. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at that time, he wasn't initiated. So, according to the tradition, you don't wear Vaishnav tilak or put on neck beads until you're initiated. That was the actual practice. So this Babaji, he challenged Bhaktivinoda, that why are you coming to me considering you're writing books on Vaishnavism and all these things? But you're not even initiated. See, you have no neck beads and no tilak, and then 6-year-old Vimala Prasad. That time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the name given in childhood was Vimala Prasad. So he replied to Srupa's brother that my father is a Vaishnava, he's a born Vaishnava. Even without these outward signs, he is completely a Vaishnava. So from the very young childhood, he was ready to refute all misconceptions. There was Bhaktivinoda Thakur had also been trained by one, even now his name is well known in Bengal, is Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar. Heard his name? So he was a very prominent scholar and educationist at that time in Calcutta, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had been trained by him. So, Vimala Prasad, in his youth, this time Ishwar Chandra is very old and very respected, but he would write in magazines challenging, why this Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar, why is he saying that Bhagavan is Niraka, without any form? So his spirit to challenge was very strong. Of course, nowadays, everyone, it's the democratic principle that everyone will speak against everyone else. Everyone has the right to free speech. This is one of the democratic principles. People were more cultured in those days. This free speech is actually not very cultured. So, the general rule is that one shouldn't speak against any elder. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was dedicated to the absolute truth, which overcomes that need to preach the absolute truth is more than the social convention that one should not speak against elders. So, seeing that all the elders were misguided, even though they may be respectable people in many ways, he preached the absolute truth without caring for social convention. He flouted social convention in so many ways. These leaders of the Indian independence movement, they didn't like Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He would cooperate with the British. He said, well, someone's got to rule. They're already ruling, so why should I fight them? They're not disturbing me. Why should I disturb them? The Smartha Brahmanas, they wouldn't like to even see the British. They considered them untouchable. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would call the governor of Bengal, and the governor of UP. Now we have UP, Uttar Pradesh. That time used UP, United Provinces. It covered more or less the same area. So he invited them to his functions. He made them the chairman of his meetings. Or the Pakka sadhus, they wouldn't have anything to do with such people. But they would call, yes, you please come to our meetings. He even arranged for a Calcutta hotel to serve meat in Mayapur, because otherwise they wouldn't come. They're accustomed to eat meat 3 times a day. It's a revolution. But Sridhar Maharaj, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, he questioned Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. If you do this, you see, our Mati will get a bad name. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you don't worry. I already considered all these things many thousands of lifetimes ago, how I shall preach at this time. He was challenged in so many ways. He did so many revolutionary things. He's even taking sannyas. How did he take sannyas? He wanted to take sannyas. So people challenged him, how can you take sannyas? You see, there's no sannyasis traditionally in the Gaudiya Vaishnava land, because of course there were sannyasis. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he describes the Chaitanya tree, of which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the trunk, he himself is the trunk and the gardener. But the 9 roots of the Chaitanya tree, who are the 9 roots? 9 sannyasis. They're the roots that they make the tree very strong. So there are 9 sannyasis. Bhavananda Puri, Ishwara Puri, Brahmananda Puri, Brahmananda Bharati, Krishnananda Puri, Sukhananda Puri. Many of them, their names are not known. They're only mentioned only in that context of the 9 roots. Paramananda Puri. So, said about 6 or 7. Keshav Bharat. Nrsingha Tirtha. Maybe I said 9. I said 9. So these are the 9 roots. So there were sannyasis in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his movement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself also took sannyas. But it appears as if all of them superficially took sannyas in the... Many of them, they took sannyas in the Mayavada, not Madhavendra Puri or Ishwara. Then they didn't take sannyas in the Gaudiya Vaishnava. It's not exactly the same as taking sannyas. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced this taking sannyas in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya by sitting in front of a picture of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and changing his own name, holding a dhamma. So this was unconventional, because there was no such convention. But he saw the need for it, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur had told him to establish Daivi Varnashram Dharma. He said in Daivi Varnashram, sannyas is essential. And he explained that people said, oh, now you're becoming very proud taking sannyas. He said, no, actually, it's the opposite. That my guru is a Vaishadhari or a Vairagi. what we now call Babaji. Gorky Chandra's Babaji. So that platform is the platform of perfection. One is supposed, when one takes Babaji dress, he's supposed to be on the platform of a perfect person. But when one takes sannyas, that means that he's still within Varnashram, because that's one of the four ashrams. That means one is still aiming at perfection. So he's saying, I'm taking a position in humility. The Vaishnava takes sannyas to take a position lower than that of his Guru Maharaj, who is a perfect person. Of course, he is Paramahamsa sannyas. He was already living the life, before he took sannyas, he was living the life of a Vairagya alone. Officially, he hadn't been given Vesh as such. Vesh simply means the dress of a Baba. So he was living like that. He was living with Gorky Chandra's Prabhu. He was living a very austere life, chanting 1 billion names of the Lord. It took him more than 9 years, simply sitting in a hut, chanting, all day, most of the night. So he was living like that, and extremely renowned. He was clearly a Paramahamsa. But he took the position of a sannyasi to preach, so that was unconventional. And he gave other sannyas, and he gave Brahmin initiation. He had a Brahmin throne. He wasn't born in a Brahmin throne. But you know, Thakur, his secular name was Kedarnath Datta. Datta is not a Brahmin, a Kayasta. Which, in Bengal, Kayastas are considered Shudras actually. Although they're not considered the same as Shudras who, artisans or laborers, they're usually they're government ministers and assist with the administration. So, formerly in the Shankara and the Mayavad Sampradaya, and I believe in the Madhva Sampradaya also, I'm not sure. But when they take sannyas, then they remove the Brahmin throne. They do so in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. They retain it. So, and also in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, when they become a Babaji, they also, if they're from Brahmin caste or higher caste, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas also have thrones, then they remove it, because you're supposed to have gone above Varnashram. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he took sannyas, the ashram of renunciation, he also put on a Brahmin thread at the same time. Just the opposite. How is it? How can you have a Brahmin thread if you're not in a Brahmin family? This was the challenge. Because traditionally that thread is given to a young boy by his father at the time of Upanayana. And that, according to Shastra, should be done at a young age. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took sannyas. How old was he? He was 40. 42. So one's supposed to do that at a young age. If you delay too long, then it's too late. Then you're shooting. Nowadays, they sometimes do the Upanayanam at the time of marriage. The boy may be 29, but he has to. He didn't do it, so they combine it with the marriage. But actually, according to Shastra, it's too late already. Anyway, even by birth, they haven't done the Garbhadhan Samskar, then anyway they'll shoot. Anyway, here he was at the age of 42, giving himself the Brahmin thread. And he explained also, that's just to show that a Vaishnava is a Brahmana, and actually more than a Brahmana. A Vaishnava is the topmost Brahmana. And he gave Brahmin initiation to others. So, people didn't like this at all. Didn't like it. He was preaching how all this so-called Vaishnavism that's going on, it's all cheating. In the name of Vaishnavism, they're simply cheating us. Gurus are going on giving initiation with no instruction. And many times, not in all cases, but many times, the so-called Vaishnava guru, they're also eating fish and all these things. Or even if they themselves weren't, they allow their disciples to do so. So-called disciples. And being a guru was mostly just, it's another kind of profession. See, according to your caste, someone is a carpenter, someone is a barber, someone is a merchant, someone is a goldsmith, and someone is a guru. Your father is a guru, then you become a guru. And your father's disciples, their children become your disciples, and when your father passes away, the disciples, they become just like your disciples. So it's a family business going on. Guru comes around once a year, and takes donations, gives blessings. That's it. Live very comfortably. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sahasrara Thakur spoke, no. It's not a guru. Guru means who is properly following, teaching, some qualification, not simply by birth. Gave the example that maybe the son of a doctor doesn't mean you automatically become a doctor. Maybe you have more chance to become a doctor, but you have to train and practice properly according to the proper method. Otherwise, if you simply say, I'm a doctor, really, what's your qualification? Well, my father and mother, they were doctors. So, now I'm going to operate on brain surgery. It's okay. Find someone else to operate. So, he would quote this verse from Padma Purana. Guravo Bhavo Santi Shishya Vitta Vaharaka Durlabha Sattarodhu Shishya Klesha Vaharaka. There are many gurus who are very expert in taking away their disciples' money. But it's very difficult to find a guru who is expert at taking away the distress of the disciples. Many will come and give blessing. But actually to take away the distress means to teach them how to get free from birth and death. But they make it very cheap. Well, they'll just give a blessing. Then the guru, the disciples say, oh, guru kripa hi kevala. It's only the blessing of the guru. That's all. That's all you need. So they think they can, just like in Christianity, so you just believe in Jesus. You do all nonsense. So in the same way, they were saying the same thing. Oh, you just do any nonsense and then the guru will bless you. Then that's all you need. Then you become, then you get free from all. Gold, whatever they're called, get bhakti, whatever. So these are all so many misconceptions. So he spoke very strongly against this. And it was difficult preaching. Several times they tried to kill him. That's well known. He cast Goswamis of Navadvip especially. He exposed their cheating. That's another thing. Navadvip, they said, this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur had shown that actually Mayapur is the birthplace, not in Navadvip. Navadvip town, that's new. That wasn't there previously. It's a new town. It's maybe what, now it's maybe what, 250 years old. It wasn't there previously. That town of Navadvip. The actual birthplace is in Mayapur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sahasrara Thakur developed Mayapur. And Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada developed that even much more. His disciples are going on, developing it more and more and more. So the caste Goswamis of Navadvip, they didn't like, because the main thing is, I mean, apart from losing their prestige, they were losing their business. Their business was affected. Because less people were going to them and to visit the so-called birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I think there are two in Navadvip, actually. As far as I remember, there's two in Navadvip town. Two places claim to be the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Both of them are bulls. So less people were going there because it was understood that it's people are cheating and they got less money when the people coming, and then less people were becoming their disciples. So that they didn't like at all. Because then you lose the income. It's our family heritage. It's my father's property. You're giving it away. You're taking it away. You're stealing it. So they became upset. To the point they wanted to kill him. Money is a very serious thing. How are we going to get our daughters married and all these things? How are we going to maintain our prestige? We'll just become beggars. If everyone goes away, then how? We may have to do some work for a living. It's pretty bad. So they became upset. They wanted to kill him. But he went on preaching. He never changed his attitude. He went on preaching. Throughout his life, he was so fearless that he thought, let me do whatever I have to do to preach Krishna consciousness. I must do it. So I was very impressed from the very beginning of hearing about Bhakti Sanskrita. Austerity, dedication to the truth, his fearlessness, he was so learned. Such an amazing personality. So at some point in time I thought I should write some book about him, because at that time there was no book published in ISKCON about Bhakti Sanskrita. But apart from that I was thinking, you see, this Prabhupada Lilamrita had just been published since the 1980s. So many wonderful stories of Prabhupada collected from the disciples. And I thought, well, there must be so many stories also about this Bhakti Sanskrita. We don't know many of them. So I thought, let me visit his disciples. At that time there were still maybe about 15 of them living in the world. So I thought, let me visit his disciples. Nowadays there are 3 of his disciples still living that I know of. 3, 4. They're all very old. They all joined the mission when they were very young. They were initiated very young. Actually 5 going up. They were all initiated very young and now they're all very old. So I thought I'd visit them. And I went around with the tape recorder and I collected so many stories. There could have been many more. If I'd have done it earlier, maybe. Those days, you see, very few devotees in ISKCON were writing books. It's not like now. It was not exactly encouraged. It was considered that, you can't put you to write a book. Wasn't encouraged. Well, Prabhupada encouraged him. Anyway, there's a long history in the scholars. And also I was thinking, you know, who am I to go around and see all these disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, great personalities. At that time I'm somewhat of a big shot. At the present time I'm somewhat of a big shot. I'm one of the smaller big shots in ISKCON by default. You know what default means? Well, it's just like, you see, so many have dropped out, so whoever stayed in, they have some kind of position. So, but in those days, you see, there are many more Prabhupada disciples still active in the mission. There's another Brahmacharya. So I thought, who am I to go and see all this? But anyway, I did. And I collected so many stories, which should be published very soon. There's still some chance of it getting that book that I compiled, published by God for me. Still some chance. It's getting very tight. At least by Ram Navami it should be. Oh, you never know. Many people are asking me, when is that book going to be ready? Because I started collecting information for it, I think, in 1988. I was going around visiting all these different people. So people always said, when is it going to be ready? So nowadays I'm saying, well, I think I must have started it under an inauspicious asterism. Because it's just going on and on and on. Although one thing is, because it's going on and on, collecting more information. Rasa, maybe Rasa, yeah, but it's little bits of information, more information. Not that, yeah, I mean, the last year has been one of really just refining the manuscript. Some new information has come, really making the language just to the point. It's really been big job, which I couldn't have imagined, but somehow the devotee who's editing, I had other editors before, but his editing is something that was previously unimaginable, how he analyzes every single word, comma, everything. Anyway, we'll see when it's published. It's been going on a long time. I collected a lot of information. And actually, there's more to collect because there's so many old magazines published in those days, back in the 1920s and 30s. Bengali, all of that could be collected. I mean, there are a few people who have collections. Maybe that's one thing you could do. Just go and get them all photographed. Others have done it. Just for the sake of the future. That's one job that needs to be done. You know, recently in Kurgan, there's people with an old collection of old magazines. Because they were bringing out this Gorya weekly magazine in Bengali for many years. And then for some time, for many years also, they had a daily newspaper. Dainik Madhya Prakash. Daily newspaper. Madan Mohan Malaviya. Who's heard the name of Madan Mohan Malaviya? It's from your area. Malviya. It's pronounced. Jatin Shekhar used to say Malaviya. Maybe that's his Oriya. That's not sure. You've heard of him? Didn't hear of him. They don't teach you in the school. Is it? Did you? Yeah. I think you heard of him? He was one of the famous members of the Indian National Congress, founder of Benares Hindu University, which was started as a kind of answer, I guess, to Aligarh Muslim University. So anyway, he was very respectful to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Even though he was in the Indian independence movement, and mostly they didn't like him because the members of the Indian independence movement didn't like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was conniving with the British. But Madan Mohan Malviya had good respect for him. And one time he asked him, how is it that you have a daily newspaper? What do you want to write about? A daily newspaper about spiritual knowledge? What do you want to write? So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Hare Krishna. He explained that, see, here we are in Calcutta. In Calcutta there are about 15 daily newspapers. Now there are less. That's under about 15. Even though the population was smaller and the number of educated, percentage of educated people was less, there are so many daily newspapers. So you see, this Calcutta is only one city in one country, in one continent, on one planet, and there are millions and billions of planets, and billions of universes, and still for this tiny little speck called Calcutta, you have 50 daily newspapers. But we're giving news of the spiritual world, which is unlimitedly more vast than Calcutta. So how much news have we got? It's unlimited. So we can produce a newspaper every second, or to speak of every day. Just that there's a shortage of readers. No shortage of information. contemplation. So there were so many these old magazines we collected and translated, and so much information was collected, mostly philosophy. I was mostly collecting anecdotes from different people, and no anecdotes, but little incidents that happened, which demonstrate the character of the Acharya. So many things that his language is. Just now this morning I was attempting to translate his last message. His language was difficult. Either in English or Bengali, or is the two language he means. Bengali also very, very difficult, very Sanskritized. He used a lot of Sanskrit. And also his whole manner of speaking was quite unusual. Difficult way of speaking. Unusual, how to explain. He would make phrases which you had to know what he was speaking about, otherwise you just couldn't understand. I just read this morning. Amade nitta prayojane tam. You understand what that means? You understand what the words mean, but what does it actually mean? It means that the place of our eternal need. It means the spiritual world, or the place of Krishna Bhakti, which is our eternal need. Our constant need, perpetual need. So his language is all that. What I'm saying is that this soul research is unlimited. You can go on your whole life. You can go on your whole life. So much research, translating his writings. He wrote so much. He was traveling widely and preaching. He also did a full commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam in Bengali. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Purports, they're mostly based on Buddhist and Sanskrit. Many of the purports, they're more or less direct translations of Buddhist and Sanskrit. Although Prabhupada didn't translate everything in Buddhist and Sanskrit, it was Chaitanya Charitamrita. Something to China. So there's so much work to do translating. Of course, we have Prabhupada's books, which Prabhupada said, by reading my books, you get in contact with the previous Acharyas. Prabhupada also said to read the previous Acharya's books. Apparently Prabhupada once said that my spiritual master, he wrote his books for me. Specifically, because Prabhupada again presented that knowledge for the rest of the world. For those who are non-Bengalis, they don't have access to what this Sanskrit Thakur's writing. As they are, and even Bengalis, as I remember saying, so difficult to understand. Very, very difficult. Even Prabhupada himself said that I used to listen, but I didn't understand. Still, I went on listening. Didn't understand means what are we to understand? Definitely, Prabhupada understood. Another time, Prabhupada said that because I heard nicely, therefore I could speak nicely. But the language and the concepts, the way he was presenting it, it may have been that because it's very different to anything that anyone spoke. So it may have been superficially difficult to understand in the beginning, but Prabhupada went on listening. That's described when Prabhupada visited the Rajamandal Parikrama that Bhaktis Dhansasra Thakur organized in 1932. Just did it once. So he just came for one day because he was a busy businessman. It wasn't that Prabhupada was just sitting around. He was a businessman and he was busy in activities. He said, actually, I wanted to make money and use it for preaching. So he was busy in business. There weren't There weren't so many people at that time, in the 1930s, doing such things. Prabhupada's business was a very modern and Western kind of thing. Western, British pharmaceuticals, British style pharmaceuticals, English medicine, as they call it even now. Angreji Dawa. They call it English medicine, even now. Means non, not Ayurvedic or here in Siddha, Tamilada or Siddha medicine, or homeopathic medicine, which is chemical medicine. So, previously they were all imported from India, and there are a few. Prabhupada, first of all, joined the Bengal Pharmaceutical Company, which was the first indigenous Indian company to start manufacturing these things in India. So Prabhupada, he joined that company, and then having got some knowledge, he left it. Started his own business. So that was a new thing at those days. Running around, getting orders, it was all. And nowadays that culture is completely different. But that was very new in those days, so Prabhupada was very busy. So he only stayed for one day. And that one day while they were on the parikrama, they were near to Kosi, there's a temple of Sheshasha. So most of the pilgrims went there, but Abhaida, Abhaida, Mr. Day, he stayed behind to listen. Most of the pilgrims didn't stay behind to listen. So as well, when he started speaking, he went on, didn't stop. Usually at least 1.5 or 2 hours or more. Sometimes his, especially his servant, Sajjan Maharaj, he wasn't a sannyasi, he was called Maharaj because he was a cook. He used to call Maharaj. So he would cook for him and then he would try to interrupt him and say, it's time for your meal. And Brother Stata would always get out of it. Why are you disturbing? Would always chastise him for interrupting. But again, every time he would try to get him to take his meal. So, he was, Bhakti Stansas was speaking, and there were just a few insiders, like close disciples who were there, mostly sannyasis. And there was a, this unknown person, they didn't know who had seen him, that, Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj first met this Abhaida in Allahabad, one of the late Goswami Maharaj. So maybe they recognized him, although they knew him. Came to Allahabad and started to say. So maybe they knew him. Otherwise, others didn't know him. Certainly Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati didn't know about this Abhai Charande. But anyway, in the half light, because in those days you see what it means. Gas lamps, portable gas lamps. So, in that dim kind of light, he was sitting in the tent, listening to Bhakti Stansaraswati. He went on 1 hour, 2 hours, and so on, the sannyasi. Get up to leave, and then he had some duties to do. But he sat and listened to me. So again, when Bhakti Stansaraswati Thakur came, he next saw him was in Allahabad. But he came to lay the cornerstone of the new Gauriya Matha, Rupa Gauriya Matha, Prayag, Allahabad. So then the devotees who had been, of the Gauriya Matha, who had been preaching there in Allahabad, in a rented house, they introduced that this is Abhai Charande, he's from a Vaishnav family, he also has been regularly attending our Matha, and he often plays Madanga, leads bhajans, leads kirtans. Sometimes he speaks also, he has a good knowledge of Vaishnava philosophy. And we'd like to recommend that he takes Harinam, that's your disciple. Oh yes, I recognize him. He listens nicely, he doesn't go away. He remembered from some months ago that Abhay had come in the tent of his
Bowed down, and even before he got out, without any introduction, who are you, what is your name, all this kind of thing. Usually they'll introduce themselves, oh, my name is such and such. When you come before a senior person, you introduce yourself, first of all. I am such and such, this is my family. But even before he got up, before any words had been said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you came with his friend, Narendra Mama. You are educated young men. You should preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Western countries. First thing. So he saw him that time, defeated him in art. That time, but young Abhai got up, challenged him. Who will listen to your Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message? We are a dependent country. We are ruled by the British. Who will listen to you? Slaves. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defeated his argument. He said that Krishna consciousness is so urgent, we can't wait for any political adjustments. We have to preach it immediately. Preaching of Krishna consciousness doesn't depend upon India being so-called independent or not. So as Prabhupada later explained, that was the only time I was ever defeated in my life. That time I accepted him as my guru, not officially, but in my heart. But later he was accepted as my guru. He accepted him. 11 years later, actually. So Prabhupada said that because I listened nicely, so therefore now I can speak this. Because he listened nicely. And to say, went on speaking. Would you like to invite him? Life was this, speaking and writing, kirtan. He would hold festivals in the Gauri Amrit, just like that. It was very common in Bengal, still is very, very common. Must be in Orissa also. Culture of Bengal and Orissa are very similar. That they would hold festivals of continuous chanting of the holy name. Nam Yajna. Nam Yajna. You must be having an Orissa. So they'd have non-stop, minimum 24 hours. Ashtapraha. Or 3 days non-stop. Or like 72 hours. No. 72 hours or 72. Prahars. Sure. So he introduced another kind of festival that another kind of kirtan festival, constant speaking for days, maybe I think maybe not at night, but constantly speaking. We'd give lectures, then another sannyasi would give lectures, just go on and on and on. He said the Gauri Amrit is just like Nityananda Prabhu studied the Namhata. So it is Nam Hatha and Vani Hatha also. The marketplace of the holy name and the marketplace of relevant instructions. We constantly go on speaking. He called his sannyasis Jivanto Mridangas. We'll be having Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. We'll be having at 12 o'clock, we'll be having the Pushpanjali and Guru Puja. And then at 12:30 prasadam. So that's only a short time. Can you come for that? Do you follow what I'm saying? Do you follow English? Can you follow what I'm saying? Otherwise we can have translation also. If you want, someone can translate. You can follow English? So he established this Vani Hatha.
that he called his sannyasis jivantamadhammas, living madhammas. He heard that brihat madhamma, which I should be calling to, since it should be briham, somehow, brihat. Brihat madhamma means the printing press. But he said his sannyasis, they should be like living madhammas, going from place to place, and just speak. Go on speaking, constantly talking about Krishna. And this was his life also. He was constantly speaking about Krishna and writing so many books, so many, the number of essays that were published in, that's why I say there's so much research. So many essays he wrote in different magazines. All very philosophical, very much researched, and so many quotations from Shastra, and so many original ideas. It's just amazing how his manner of expression and the different nuances of understanding of Vaishnava philosophy. Nuances, do you know what that means? It means like a subtlety, some subtle point. So, his disciples used to say that every time he sat down to speak, he'd say something new. Not that it's new, because it's the same old philosophy, but his insights and his manner of expression. Again, that Prabhupada in that poem, Adore, adore you all, a happy day. Blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared in Puri, blessed place. Something divine comes. So in that poem he also said, he gave the example of old wine in new bottles. It's an English saying. Is that in Croatian? It's not in Indian culture. We don't have such things. But old wine in new bottles. It means that if you have old wine, it's supposed to be good. They say it in Tamil. So they say it in Tamil. My appreciation of Tamil culture just went down a few points. So the idea is that the old wine is very good, and if it's put in a new bottle, it doesn't change it, only the presentation, only the outward presentation is changed. So that is true in this sense that I'm saying that he presented the philosophy of so many different insights, because actually Krishna is unlimited. And the understanding of Krishna can be in so many different ways. And if you go on, everyone will experience this. If you go on again and again and again, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, every time you read, you'll find there's more things there than you thought. You'll find it's richer, and you'll appreciate the depth and the richness. If you actually read, that means applying our intelligence in a mood of service and prayer, then the more we read, the more we'll find it. Again and again and again we'll find it. And each time we read, we'll think, well, I didn't really know anything about it. Because it's unlimitedly deep. So Bhaktisthan Sarasvati Thakur was bringing out so many different realizations and understandings. And another meaning of the old wine in new bottles is that it was presenting the same process and philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but in an unprecedented manner. This Yukta Vairagya, there's that verse from the Samhita Siddha, Rupa Goswami, Yukta Vairagya. So, what is the meaning of Yukta Vairagya? Anasakta Siddha Shayamyata Amukha Yanjataha Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vairagya Mucha. That means that without being attached to anything of this world, one can engage everything in this world in Krishna's service, as opposed to the Falgu Vairagya, or meaningless renunciation of the impersonal. Prapanchakatiya Buddhya, what's the next one? Parisambandha Vastami. Mumukshubi Prityago Vairagyam Falgu Khatya. The those who are mumukshumi, those who are desirous of liberation, they reject everything of this world as false, not knowing that everything belongs to Krishna and everything has its relationship with Krishna. Therefore, their renunciation is superficial. How do you translate Phalgu? Do you know? How do you translate Phalgu? That word also comes in. Superficial, is that? Superficial, not very meaningful. So, Rupa Goswami had written that, but practically the purport was brought out by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. No one previously to that, I mean, it was there in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It was there, but hadn't been given so much importance. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he brought out the meaning of that verse. Why should we reject everything? We should use everything in Krishna's service. Now they have motor cars, use it in Krishna's service. Don't reject it. Sadhus, they would never use it. Sadhus, they walk. They don't even use a bullock car, mostly. Mostly they walk. Not to speak of using a car. The printing press, oh, that's a foreign thing. It's got nothing to do with Vedic culture. Someone protested, he saw the Gauriya Math logo of this Sanskrit Thakur design. There was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayan, the Mudanga, the bell, and the lamp for offering arati. These were all the pictures in there. There's also a printing press. So why is the printing press there? I mean, all these other things, they're part of traditional Indian religious culture. What's the printing press? So there's a foreign, Western. It's got nothing to do with sadhu. It's only materialistic people have got any interest in such things. So no, this is our, this is very much part of our mission. We use that for preaching Krishna consciousness. We require that. So it was there in the same section. Mudanga cartels and printing. This is sankirtan. We have rhythm, big rhythm, small madanga you can hear, short distance. The big madanga goes everywhere, all over. So, he used everything in Krishna's service and he showed what is the meaning of that. Why reject? If the printing press can be used to serve, if our mission is to preach Krishna consciousness, then, you see there are so many newspapers and magazines and they're promoting so many things which are not Krishna consciousness. We can use the same media to promote Krishna consciousness. He was very interested in this. Prabhupada explained that. I think among his followers, definitely Prabhupada picked up this point more than others. Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur's desire to print books. Because he personally instructed Prabhupada about this. Maybe it was 1935 in Kartik and Radhakund. He was staying there during the Kartik month. But this stands as a good step. Means Kartik means 1935 means shortly before he left this world. Because he left on the 1st of January 36. So he said to Abhaida, he took him aside. Even though there are so many, all his main disciples are there, he took him aside and spoke with him personally. He said that, I'm very disappointed that now my disciples, they're fighting among themselves. When we had a rented house at Uldadonga Road, then we were living peacefully. Somehow or other we got the money for the rent and we were going on with our activities. Then we got this big marble temple in Bhagavatam, and now they're all fighting. Who will occupy this room? Who will occupy this room? This room is better for me. I deserve this room. They're all trying to become the proprietor. So he said, actually I had a desire to print books. I think it would be better to destroy this temple and sell the bricks. print books with the money. Even at the time of opening that temple, at the inauguration ceremony, he said, even at that time, he said, the real need is to build the temple within the heart. And that can be better achieved by distributing books, by printing books. He said, for this, it is required to print books. He said, it's more necessary than building temples. So he said to Abhay this time, he said, I have a strong desire to print books. And he said to him, if you ever get money, print books. That instruction went right into the heart. Prabhupada, because there were some things in Prabhupada's life that you see. When he was reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he read this section that the order of the spiritual master should be the life of the disciple. So, he took that very, very seriously. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, if you ever get money, print books, he took it very seriously. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was promoting this book production. He himself wrote so many books. And his magazine, Prabhupada told that he used to see if even some not very significant brahmachari, these are big sannyasis, and there's a gradation. So even if some not very well-known brahmachari would go to Navadvipa and sell a few of these newspapers, Nadia Prakash, he'd come back and say, oh, he'd be very pleased. Oh, he liked that very much. So distributed. So Prabhupada, he noticed that. Oh, if he's very pleased with just distributing a few newspapers, then what to speak if we make books and distribute hundreds and thousands and millions all over the world. So he was promoting, he wanted his books distributed. I can't remember exactly the incident. Chakravarti was explaining that there was some kind of, between some of Prabhupada's disciples, there was some kind of disagreement or something. How they could please Prabhupada. Something I can't remember exactly. And Prabhupada said to them that, actually, the reason I'm doing everything that I am doing, with especially writing these books, publishing these books, is that you should understand that the real reason I'm doing this, there could be many reasons. I want to preach, I want to liberate the conditioned souls, or whatever it may be. So the real reason, he said, the main reason I'm doing this, or maybe it's not the only reason. I'm simply trying, this is my service to myself. This is my motivation, it's my main motivation. I simply want to serve the Guru Maharaj. One time Prabhupada wrote that this is in the early days of ISKCON, before ISKCON was even very widely spread. So Prabhupada said that, you see, even in the early days, there were so many devotees were fighting, arguing among themselves. Prabhupada said, I think this managing ISKCON is too much of a strain. It's distracting me from writing my books. So he said, I think I'll just leave all this and I'll only write my books. He said, I can give up my traveling and preaching, but I can't give up my book translation because this is my service to my book. Because his Guru Maharaj had also told him to preach. But he understood as most significant his Guru Maharaj's order to him to produce books. So for that reason, you'll find this described in Prabhupada in Amritam. He retired and was living in Vrindavan, but he was always going to Delhi to get paper, and then he would be bargaining with the paper merchants, going around begging and people insulting him. Who is this sadhu? Give him 3 paisa, chase him around, get rid of him. He went through so many insults. He didn't have, he could live, he could have stayed in Vrindavan and lived very peacefully. He was always going to Delhi. Then often he wasn't even eating because he didn't have money. He wanted to save money for his paper. That one, the man who was printing for him, some Jain, his name was Jain, he would ask him, Swamiji, did you take breakfast today? He said, no, it's all right. Just sit there, I'll arrange something. Because often he would eat once a day. And so, in Vrindavan and Delhi in the winter, it's very cold. If you eat only once a day, it's not easy because it's so cold. You eat food to keep warm. But he was only eating once a day because another time, this incident was told by Narayan Maharaj. He came to visit Prabhupada at Ratha Damodar. And it was very cold, it was the winter. Prabhupada was just on a thin mat on the floor. He was lying down, he was sick. It was cold. Cold. He said, well, why don't you get a proper mattress? So Prabhupada said, I need it. I need every paisa for producing books. He undertook so much austerity to print these books. I have to do this to please my Guru Maharaj. Let the spirit carry it. He really was the ideal disciple. Practically we could say he understood the mission of his Guru Maharaj and he understood his activities. How he took very, very seriously. Even this going to America, everyone discouraged him. No one encouraged him. But he thought, I have to go. The Guru Maharaj has ordered me. It's my duty. In one lecture in 1966 in New York, Prabhupada was speaking. I'm sitting here in New York, but actually I don't like it here. He said, my home is in Vrindavan. It's a very nice place. There are so many temples and everyone is chanting Hare Krishna. It's New York and it's not very nice. Actually, he was giving an example. He was just explaining about Arjuna, that Krishna was trying to tell Arjuna, you have to fight because it's your duty. So Prabhupada explained, giving the example of himself. So why am I here? You may think, what am I doing in New York? This horrible place, when I have such a nice home in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, I'm not happy here. Prabhupada said, I am here because it is my duty, because my spiritual master has ordered me. So, that spirit, that's what makes the acharyas so strong, because they have full faith in the order of their guru, and they're prepared to do anything to execute. They all went through so many austerities to preach. No one can preach without undertaking austerities. It's not that you just simply talk something and then that's it. But preaching means fighting and so many difficulties one has to do. So we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was absolutely unpopular with so many people, so much time. But he went on preaching. Actually, for some time he retired. He was preaching and then he was just so disgusted with all these sadhus. He just retired and he took this vow to chant 1 billion names. But still, sometimes he was going on. But towards the end of this vow, this Shatakoti Nam Jagya Vrata, took him 9 years chanting constantly. And sometimes going out and preaching. But mostly just chanting. And towards the end of that time, he had a vision in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Panchatattva, so many associates of Lord Chaitanya, so many prominent acharyas in the third world, they all came and said, okay, now your vow is almost finished, then go and preach. Just go. Now you preach. Don't worry. We are with you. So don't fear for anything. Whatever you need, men and money, they're all waiting to be used for you in your service. So he went and he preached. He undertook so many austerities. So then later on he was using a motor car, going here and there by train and preaching on the radio. At that time there was only one radio station in all of India. All these things he was using. Sometimes, generally he would dress in very simple sannyasi clothes. And if he went to some public function, he would dress up with fine clothing. So he accepted these things for the service of Krishna. So he thought, we have to preach Krishna consciousness. Now he saw the modern age, that if you go as a beggar, people won't respect you. So for important functions, he would dress up very nicely. Just to give some impression to the people, so that, oh, is very important person. Then they'd listen to what he had to say. Otherwise, personally, he didn't care. Himself, when he was in the mud, just among his own disciples, he was very separate. So it wasn't that he was attached to all these things, but that he understood the meaning of Yukta Vairagya, applied renunciation. The same thing, he came to Vrindavan in 1932 in a Jaguar sedan. You know the Jaguars? It's one of the best cars. You don't see them. You've never seen one in India. You don't even see them much in the West. They're very expensive. So he came in a Jaguar. There were other cars. A Ford car. A cheap car. He came in a Jaguar car. So he came to Vrindavan. Now, at that time, it's very unlikely there are any proper roads. Because even when I first went to Vrindavan in 1975, road was, this road here was much better than the roads. The road from, actually the Delhi Agra road, they always kept good for tourists. But otherwise, most of the roads in India, even the Calcutta to Bombay road, was like, tank would be the best vehicle to go on it, be the most comfortable. Really, I mean, just terrible roads. Whatever roads were there were terrible. And mostly they didn't have roads, it was just some dirt track. So he came in, definitely no one ever came to Vrindavan in a car before. Even you see, Rajas used to visit. You see, there are different, the Maharaj of Bharatpur, he made that palace at Kishigat. So, different Rajas used to visit, but it's unlikely they came by car, even if they would have cars. But the idea was you shouldn't come to a sacred place in a vehicle. Even if, say, the Maharaj of Bharatpur came by car, at the edge of Vrindavan, he came down and walked, surely, because that was the proper etiquette. You're not supposed to. Even then, recently in Tirupati, they only introduced buses. Otherwise, people would walk. Or they'd hire a taxi. So he came in a car. There are no cars. Mostly very few people had cars. Only the very top people, the top British administrators, top British merchants, and very, very rich families, kings, and there were some rich merchants at that time also. Tatars. Very few people even had cars. And sadhus, they didn't even have stitched cloth. Just wrapped in some clothing taken. Maybe handloom, that would be the most concession. Otherwise, cut it. They just take a strip of cloth and wrap it around. They didn't even have stitched cloth, so to speak. Cars, that was for very modern, traditional type people, they would have nothing to do with. especially in Vrindavan, a holy, remote holy place, far away from any city. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur came to Vrindavan in a Jaguar Sedan. The people criticized, "Oh, you're spoiling the atmosphere." He said, "I've come to teach you how to, what does it mean to follow Rupa Goswami? You're dressing like Rupa Goswami with a short piece of cloth around you. But you have no idea actually what is Rupa Goswami's teaching. This is Rupa Goswami's teaching. Come in a car and preach Krishna.